Hello and welcome to another episode of The Damage Report. It's a good start to the day. Hey JR, you're here.
What's
Save up? Us JR, please. I don't understand why that triggered right there. Anyway, it is not just a regular episode of the show, it's JR Wednesdays
Fun
here
times.
At The Damage Report.
I think what the phone was trying to tell you is that it's JR Wednesday. JR Wednesday.
It started to play music. It was like we need to get hyped for JR's appearance. Anyway, you should be hyped. That tiny little yay bar. Thank you.
Yeah.
It is actually my birthday.
Is it, first of all, you look like you're a sprightly young 31-year-old.
I vaguely remember 31.
I never understood the thing about hiding your age, and men really don't have to do it. But I understand why some women do because of the way our society treats them. But would you like to share with us?
No. And the thing is,
like, sweepstakes, guess John's age.
If you take care of yourself, if you take your health seriously, if you eat all natural Pop-Tarts like I do, then you don't have to be ashamed of your age. Because the older you are, as long as you still look good, it's actually impressive. So I'm just gonna say it, I'm 50. I'm actually 50, and I will go toe to toe with J-Lo for 50-year-old bodies. No, I'm not quite that old, but I am getting there rapidly. About a year, actually. Yeah. But anyway, thank you for that acknowledgement and putting me on the spot. And do you know what else is exciting? A little birthday present for me. Ken Klippenstein returns to the show today.
Oh man.
He's all grozed up and he's off doing his thing, but he's coming back with a scoop for us later
on. For the few of you that maybe only watch this show and don't watch the TYT main show, we're trying to get Ken Klippenstein to send his purple sweater in. We're gonna hang it from the rafters.
Yeah, in honor of him. We're gonna retire his number.
Go ahead and tweet to him. We need the purple sweater.
Exactly. You know what? We got a lot to get to, though. We're gonna talk about, Rush Limbaugh, you know, the Medal of Freedom winner. We're gonna talk a little bit about his record later on today. Adam Schiff is facing death threats. Some of the people you're following on Instagram don't exist. We got a lot of stuff to talk about a little bit later on. But before all that, let's touch base with impeachment, the big domestic news of the day. Everybody expects that Trump is going to be acquitted in the impeachment trial today. Like, we're gonna take a look at some of the votes that maybe could go the other way. Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski. I mean, they wouldn't even give us witnesses. Susan Collins did only once it was clear it wouldn't happen. But maybe they'll actually vote to remove him from office. But no, we understand where the vote is going to go. But I want you to listen to the excuses that are given by these individuals. First, here is Senator Susan Collins on why she feels okay with leaving Trump in power.
Article 1 alleges the president, quote, will remain a threat to national security and the Constitution if allowed to remain in office. Are you confident that the president won't seek foreign assistance again?
I believe that the president has learned from this case.
What do you believe the president has learned?
The president has been impeached. That's a pretty big lesson. I'm voting to acquit because I do not believe that the behavior alleged reaches the high bar in the Constitution for overturning an election and removing a duly elected president.
But the president says he did nothing wrong. Why do you think he learned something?
He was impeached, and there has been criticism by both Republican and Democratic senators of his call. I believe that he will be much more cautious in the future.
That person is held up as one of the most reasonable Republicans. What she said, like, if I am, you know, because it's my birthday, I'm feeling good, I want to be charitable. She's one of the most naive people I've ever seen literally in my life. That's the best case scenario, and it probably isn't accurate. She was lying to our faces about how he's been chastened by this experience. After being impeached, why would he ever? I mean, think about what would happen if he did pursue foreign assistance. He'd be protected from the consequences. He'd never do it then.
Crazy.
What are you talking about?
It's not like it, again, everyone, as you said, the best case scenario is that she's naive and somehow forgot the way they all felt about Donald Trump before he became president. All of them called him a liar, called him detached from the truth, said he was a sociopath, said it would be their fault. It would be the downfall of the Republican Party if he got in office. Lindsey Graham is the one who said that.
He'd destroy the Republican Party.
After all of that, suddenly, he's learned his lesson. That's nothing like the characteristics of what you guys described him as or anyone knows him as. Mm-hmm. What will actually happen, if anything, by the way, because it could give him carte blanche to be like, I can do whatever I want because they gave me this free card, get out of jail free card. He'll circle the wagons and he'll eliminate any more potential snitches. That's what he's concerned about. Mm-hmm. Since the beginning, he's concerned about whistleblowers,
leaks,
and loyalty. As he's found that may not always be the case, he's going to make sure he continues to tighten up that circle. And that's what dictators do. They have a small circle of people they can trust to carry out what they want.
Yeah. Yeah. And like her thing is, we don't need to remove him because he's learned his lesson. Okay. So let's pretend that we don't know what he thinks coming out of this. We do, and we're going to get to that in a minute. But let's say we don't know. Let's just look at the past and see if we can learn any lessons. So Donald Trump, in his first run for the presidency, 100% repeatedly, both in public and in private, asked for foreign assistance. We can disagree about whether he received it, but he did it. In public, his campaign manager had meetings, he was asking for it on TV, all that. He asked for it. As a result of that, there was a multi-year investigation of him that was far more damaging and distracting and all of that than impeachment was, which was only a couple of months. As soon as the Mueller report came out the next day, he had phone calls trying to pressure Ukraine to help him out. So he didn't learn anything from a multi-year investigation of his seeking foreign assistance. Then he does it the second time, even though he knows the consequences, and the Republicans 100% protect him again. You would have to be a madman to think that he would not. He's going to do it in this election, not like for future stuff, the midterms, wants to help out Republicans. He is going to actively do it now. But that's the hypothetical. We don't have to be hypothetical. I mean, Norm O'Donnell in that said, he says he didn't do anything wrong. In fact, you can take a look at this if you want to check it out. Philip Bumpin, it even conveniently has a photo of Susan Collins. The 75 times he's insisted he did nothing wrong. If a kid keeps saying, I didn't do anything wrong, imagine if the parents were like, no, he learned his lesson. How stupid would you have to be?
Every time that he did it.
And in particular, like that's in general, he's been saying he did nothing wrong. He was asked about Susan Collins specifically saying he had learned a lesson. The president said, it was a perfect call. He is yelling at her, no, I have learned nothing because I didn't do anything. It was a perfect call. I can do whatever I want.
You don't have to believe us. Believe him. It's the way it's always been. He's never hidden any of it. By the way, none of it has been done covert. None of it has been done in a way where he's like, well, I'm going to make sure that people don't find out what I'm doing is illegal. He does it so blatantly. I'm not even sure if he knows that it's illegal. Now, not that he doesn't know that it's wrong or the way does other presidents haven't done before, at least so blatant. I'm sure other presidents have had corruption we never found out about. But what he's learned is like so much so he thinks he's a different kind of human being. So even if he considers something is illegal, he'll go, I did it. But I get to do it because I'm Donald Trump. It's the way his brain works. And until we understand that, as outrageous as that perspective is, you're going to continue to run into this brick wall,
yeah.
Susan Collins. But I don't think she really cares.
No. She's fundamentally unserious. Just not. She is a hack of a different flavor. Like the other Republicans, she likes to pretend that she's not, but she is. The
if
end
nothing
result
else,
is
a
same.
Normal human being, after going through year-long investigation and then somehow skirting that responsibility that was blatantly put forward of the evidence. But after you have a collective group of a majority of the Senate backing you up publicly and vehemently, like you're forced to go harder with this.
Yeah.
If nothing else, this encourages them more than the previous thing.
Well, you know who is going to go hard? Trump's inner circle, because we're like, has he learned a lesson about other times? Like hypothetically, he could ask, you know, he could ask Ireland for help or something. I wonder what he'll do in the future. No, let's stick for just a second to this particular call for foreign assistance. Rudy Giuliani was asked about whether they should push forward with investigations of Biden. He says, absolutely, 100%. I would have no problem with him doing that. In fact, I'd have a problem with him not doing it. I think he'd be saying that Joe Biden can get away with selling out the United States, making us a fool in the Ukraine. Giuliani has not been pushed aside by Donald Trump. He has not been attacked by Donald Trump in any way. He's still working for Donald Trump. And they're saying they're going to go forward with this call for assistance. But again, he learned something. Yeah, he did. He 100% learned something. He learned that he can do whatever he wants. That's the system we have. He's not formally a king, but in effect, he can do whatever he wants. By the way, let's turn now just briefly to Lisa Murkowski. She said, based on what we heard, clearly a factor in that was the president was looking for a certain action from President Zelensky as it related to the Bidens. I believe that. So she says, Yes, he was trying to pressure Zelensky to investigate the Bidens. So she gets it. Hey, we won. No, the response to the president's behavior is not to disenfranchise nearly 63 million Americans and remove them from the ballot. I cannot vote to convict. The Constitution provides for impeachment, but does not demand it in all instances. So I grant you, she says, yes, he tried to pressure a foreign leader to announce bogus investigations of Joe Biden to manipulate the effects of the 2020 election, but I'm not gonna do anything about it.
This doesn't matter. Again, it goes back to, you can do whatever you want. It's it's the Dershowitz argument again. Yes, he did all these things, it was horrible, but he's the president, and what we don't wanna do is remove a criminal president. Mm-hmm. We'll admit that he's a criminal president, but we don't want people to be mad that they voted for a criminal and he was removed for being a criminal.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. What are you there for?
Yeah. Yeah, and look, anyone who says something, something, overturn an election, never trust a thing that that person says. By its very nature, every single impeachment is going to that definition, overturn an election. It's an irrelevant point, it doesn't mean anything. It's clearly laid out under what circumstances impeachment is merited. Bribery, high crimes and misdemeanors, treason, all of that. Look, we can disagree about whether we believe that this falls under, I think it's very clear. Mm-hmm. But this whole thing of, I think we should just let the people vote, that can be the retort to any crime a yep. president commits. Trump could go on a shooting spree and kill all the Democrats who are running against him. And Lisa Murkowski could throw her hands up and say, well, yeah, you know, I agree, it's inappropriate. But shouldn't the American people really decide at the end of the day?
Yep.
It is fundamentally devoid of any intellectual or ethical merit.
Let's go with the rest of the flawed, this last thing on this, I'm sorry. The rest of this flawed take is, hey, they wanna investigate the Bidens, this is open. Hey, let's investigate the Bidens. Giuliani said, let's investigate the Bidens. Hey, you know what, there's a significant, there's millions and millions of Americans who still support Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. Should you take that into account? Hey, don't investigate the Bidens, don't investigate Joe, don't investigate Hunter, don't go into that, solely because people still like Joe Biden. Mm-hmm.
Just let the people decide.
That's our reasoning. Let the people decide.
So frustrating. Oh, by the way, just a small amount of credit. Doug Jones apparently is going to vote to convict him. He did announce that earlier today. By the way, it might be happening right now.
Reluctantly,
whatever. He's going to do it. Something, I guess. It's something. In general, we get nothing. Okay, we're going to take a short break. Lots more to get to after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
You might have, like me, been on Instagram and you follow some accounts and you see that, oh, they're promoting products. And maybe you wonder briefly, how much experience do they really have with these products? How much do they know about that flat tummy tea? What if you found out that they literally can't experience the products because they're not real people? That's where we turn to a sort of black mirror filter laid over our social media world. And joining us now to break this down, writer of an awesome article, reporter for the Huffington Post, Jesselyn Cook, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here, very much enjoyed your article. So we're talking about artificial influencers. Tell me a little bit about what this looks like.
Well, they look a lot like people. They're popping up all over Instagram, and these influencers, they're computer generated. They're either created by brands themselves or by digital marketing agencies that let different brands use them to promote their products or services.
So how realistic are these in general? Like, if someone is just sort of going about their day, are they going to, well, we're seeing some there. Are they generally labeled as being artificial? Is the nature of how artificial they are made clear? And in general, how good is this technology getting visually?
Well, it ranges a bit. Michaela, who we just saw on the screen, you can tell that she looks like kind of like an avatar from a video game, but some of them look very realistic, and that's intentional by design, and very few of them disclose that they're computer generated and not real people and go to great lengths to seem human-like and engage with their audiences.
Yeah, that sexy colonel that we showed looks, now that's literally what his name is. I'm not just like, it's not a value judgment, although clearly he's a very sexy CGI creation. I can't tell the difference between that and a real person. I think he looks 100% real. So where did this come from? Why is it, like, instead of just having an actor pose for photos for KFC, why would they create a digital mascot like the sexy colonel? What are some of the advantages to that?
I think for KFC, it was just a marketing gimmick that was supposed to be kind of funny. But for a lot of brands, digital influencers, virtual influencers appeal to them for brand safety reasons. With a human influencer who endorses your brand, there's a risk that the next week they're going to be outed as a racist or they're going to do something scandalous. Whereas with CGI influencers, brands and marketing agencies have full control over what they do and what they say.
So this is really interesting. So I totally agree with you. You never know what some of these influencers are gonna end up doing or saying. And the track record in the past has been pretty bad for a lot of them. Generally, they end up saying something really inappropriate. But you also want your brand mascot to be real, like to seem like a human. And so in the case of Michaela, she has 1.9 million followers. She talks to them about being bullied, drama with her friends, her dating life, and even being sexually assaulted, despite the fact that she is not a real thing that can be sexually assaulted. So in this sort of quest to be real, could they potentially cross the line in the same way that a human influencer could?
Yeah, absolutely. That instance with Michaela definitely crossed the line. Brud, which is the company that runs Michaela, they took down the video of her talking about her sexual assault right away after there was some backlash. But it's certainly less likely that you're going to be dealing with something like that with a virtual influencer than with a human.
Yeah. So what I'm curious about is, like, so I sort of get how you might want to, if you want to have an account that's really popular and you don't think that you yourself can do it, maybe you're not super photogenic or something, maybe you create this avatar, create a life. It's kind of like a piece of living art or something like that. For the purposes of these companies, though, where they're going to be promoting products, there are legal regulations that these might or already are running afoul of, right?
Right. So influencer marketing is becoming really big. It was valued at $8 billion last year, and it's expected to hit 2022, it's going to be $15 billion. And so the FTC has started to pay a little more attention to influencer marketing. They haven't rolled out any specific policies to deal with the transparency issues posed by CGI influencers just yet. But there is a rule saying that if you are going to endorse a product, you can't talk about it if you haven't actually used it. And with CGI influencers, of course, they can't try anything because they're not real.
Yeah, at best case scenario, the sexy colonel can try digital chicken, but that's probably as far as it goes. So I did have another question, though, because in your article, you talk about some proposed legislation that might help in this situation. And one area is making sure that in the same way that sponsored posts are supposed to be clearly labeled, that if you are a digital avatar, that needs to be made apparent in the post, correct?
Yeah, so a firm called Fullscreen did a study last year, and they found that 42% of millennials and Gen Zers have actually followed a CGI account without realizing that it's computer generated. And that's where it gets really complicated with deceptive advertising. If you see the sexy colonel or Michaela promoting a product saying how much they love it, and you don't realize that they're not real and they've never used that product, that may influence how you spend your money. So some experts, Truth in Advertising, which is an advertising watchdog organization, they are pushing for disclosure of the fact that these influencers are not real.
Jess, it's JR. So the same way, whenever you have the advent of all this technology and things change, like the way we had Uber and Lyft and all those things, and taxi drivers, traditional taxi drivers were upset because their jobs were getting taken away. Have you noticed, or has there been a pushback from real life, living, breathing influencers, maybe losing some revenue because the opportunities are getting maybe taken away by things like this? Have they had any pushback on that yet? Because that's kind of like a livelihood for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's kind of wild to think that even influencers may not be immune from automation taking over people's jobs. I haven't seen any pushback yet, but with the way this trend is growing and based on how popular these CGI influencers are becoming and how many brand deals they're getting, I could certainly see that becoming an issue. Mm.
Yeah, and you know, I was talking with my producers before this, and one of the proposed pieces of legislation involved, if you are computer generated, then you would have to identify it. And there are these interesting edge cases where I believe, Michaela, I could be wrong. Initially, the photographs are of a person, but the face is digitally added afterward. And so that hypothetically would be computer generated, even though most of the image is real. But almost everyone's photos have some sort of digital manipulation, you know, from filters to colors being changed to, you know, figure outlines being changed to dog ears being added. How it seems like it would be a difficult thing to adjudicate.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be very complicated and messy. And I think that's why agencies like TINA, organizations like TINA, are hoping that the FTC will step in soon with some specific rules to say what is okay and what is not, and also how to disclose if an influencer is computer generated, whether that's acceptable to do that through a hashtag virtual influencer, or whether it needs to be more explicit. We just don't know yet.
Yeah. Well, Jocelyn, we appreciate, as always, you joining us. Great work there at the Huffington Post.
Thanks, John.
And I just want to finally add, I've had conversations with my wife, who is an actress, so she hates these conversations. But in the same way that, like, if you're going to give like advertising stuff to an influencer, you'd prefer it was someone who you have a team of social media interns that are that person. Like, artificial actors and actresses in the future, why would you want like to have someone who could be a diva or might want more money for the next movie? Like, I have a feeling that you're going to be seeing personalities, digital avatars, not the character in a movie, but someone who is playing the character that can be in multiple movies and shows. Maybe they can't do that quite yet, but I think that in the same way that now we're talking about Sexy Colonel, I think that like the star of Fast and Furious 17 is not going to be a flesh and blood human.
Well, yeah, everyone's going to be voiceover actors now instead of real life actors.
Until eventually they can replace that too. Okay. Anyway, we're going to take another break. We come back, Adam Schiff facing some death threats. We're going to break it down after this. It looks like today the whole impeachment thing is about to wrap up, but it's gone on for a few months. And throughout, no one has been a more daily thorn in the side of Donald Trump when it comes to impeachment than Adam Schiff. And Trump has been lashing out at Adam Schiff for a long time now. So look, we know how this goes over the past few years. Trump demonizes a politician and, you know, it's a countdown starts until someone mails a bomb to them or something like that.
Yep.
Turns out, no, that already happened. We just didn't know about it. This was on October 1st. Jan Peter Meister allegedly called Adam Schiff's office. It's the same day, by the way, that President Donald Trump called for him to be arrested for treason. Total coincidence. Following an investigation, Meister was arrested on October 3rd. He was indicted on October 23rd on a host of charges, including illegal possession of a number of firearms. He's pleaded not guilty. So what did he do? Well, he called Schiff's office and he left a voicemail. We've had to bleep out sections, so it doesn't necessarily register as English anymore, but let's put it up and you'll get an idea of what I'm talking about. There's a lot of stars in that. Yeah, go F your mother, you son of a B, because I'm gonna F and blow your brains out, you F and piece of S, mother F. Yeah, it goes on like that for a while, but there's a lot of threats to blow Adam Schiff's brains out. And this is what we've seen before with Maxine Waters and Ilhan Omar. They become a target of the obsession of Donald Trump and his media allies. Mm-hmm. And eventually, someone, best case scenario, threatens to murder them. Worst case scenario, tries to murder them. And so in this case, we have threatens to murder him.
And now, of course, he's been brought up. They arrested him and found all this stuff. We'll probably get the details of what they found in his apartment.
Yeah, well, we do know. So a little bit more details on him. He's a registered sex offender. His lawyers say that he made the threats in a drunken stupor. So that makes it better. Officers say that when they arrested him 2 days after the incident, he smelled of alcohol, cursed at agents, and stated, F Adam Schiff. So even as he's being hauled away, he is he's raising the banner of war against Adam Schiff even more.
So somehow this is like his manifesto. I mean, considering they're coming to get him and he's still holding strong to his beliefs and his values about killing Adam Schiff. Another aspect, of course, is he's a conservative. He's mad. He's drunk. He's a registered sex offender.
He's got guns.
Yeah. Apparently he has no regard for the law. But he's watching Fox News.
Yep.
And that's where he comes in and tries to find a way to do something about this scourge on our earth. There has to come a point when you have to. We just spoke in our last with Jesselyn Cook about AI and laws and rules around what you may promote and push out. This is just for advertising dollars. Mm-hmm. Since you can't have a fake AI come out and take over for people and people not know that. So when Fox News stokes violence and it actually can affect the lives of people, let's not forget politicians get shot. Mm-hmm. In case you guys forgot, that happens. Then there has to become a point when the responsibility of the people who are stoking those flames have to put some kind of disclaimer out there, say this is a joke. We're just out here trying to make money. Caesar Sayoc was the other guy who sent all those mail bombs to CNN and a bunch of the different entities and certain politicians that were democratically elected. Mm-hmm. Again, he's pointed out and said, I've been watching Fox News. They told me to go do this. This same guy, I was watching Fox News. They told me to go kill Adam Schiff, so I'm just following orders. And that's not just a heat of the moment thing. When they came to arrest him, he said the same thing.
He's still doing it.
This is his principle. This is who he is.
Yeah,
I get drunk and I watch Fox News and I get mad and I do something about it.
Yeah, and look, this is the actual defense of his lawyers. They explained to investigators that he watches Fox News and likely was upset at something that he saw in the news. He stated that he strongly dislikes the Democrats. Well, yes, he wants to kill them and feels they're to blame for this country's political issues. Which look, you know, half the country's gonna think that the Democrats are responsible. The other half is gonna think that the Republicans are. Some people think both are. I think they're the most accurate. Don't kill anyone, I would say. And here's the thing, like as we alluded to with the October 1st thing, Trump said that Schiff should be questioned at the highest level for fraud and treason. He tweeted, why isn't Congressman Adam Schiff being brought up on charges for fraudulently making a statement? He's referring to the joke. Mm-hmm. Remember, he took this like joke that Adam Schiff told and has for months been saying that he is lying about the call to get Trump removed from office and overthrow an election. Mm-hmm. That is the sort of willful lying over and over and over, magnified by Fox News over and over and over, that clearly is seeping into the addled, alcohol-soaked brains of Fox News viewers. And the vast, vast majority of them will, the most they'll ever do will be, oh, I hate him. Like most people will when they watch the news. A smaller percentage will leave voicemails like this. A very, very tiny fraction will actually plot to assassinate an official. And those people are out there. And so you have to try to be accurate in the things that you say. Trump has no compunctions, no ethical obligations that he feels to do that. And that's fine, but then it's on the media to provide a filter on that. And Fox News is even more enthusiastic in going after Adam Schiff than Donald Trump is. Even, was today the 4th?
5th.
5th, so yesterday.
It's your birthday, bro.
It is, actually, I should know that. Yesterday, Greg Gutfeld had this whole like comedy sketch about pencil neck Adam Schiff like gleefully trying to overturn the election. That was yesterday, it was months after the death threat. And Trump is going around throwing like schoolyard bully insults at him. Yep.
When you say terms like treason, which he says a lot, and also when he references the whistleblower, Trump again saying, you know what we used to do to those people. This isn't subtle jabs or subtle suggestions for what you should do. What do we do with people who are found guilty of treason? We kill them. Mm-hmm. So if you're one of my loyal followers, you're gonna do my bidding and kill this guy. You don't have to say the full words to get it. If someone goes on TV, points in the camera and says, you should go kill this person, most networks, outlets would probably cut that off.
Yeah.
Or if they say, you should start this fire, you should go do this. If you're stoking violence, directly stoking violence, That's one of those things that people don't want to be responsible for broadcasting. Mm-hmm. But instead, we're allowing this to happen and say, well, he just went about himself to go do these things. It's been seen over and over and over again that people get pushed to do these things. Yeah. And it gets just granted as just a normal thing that happens. When the congressional shooting happened on the softball field and some Republicans were shot by a Lib or Democratic supporter, mm-hmm. of a candidate, I think it was Bernie supporter, Bernie Sanders didn't come out and say, well.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do about it? Nothing I can do. There's constant worry and concern and say, yeah, now, by the way, you guys, we're against these guys, but let's not do anything crazy or stupid. There's always to be that preface. Yeah. For some reason, these kind of entities don't have that responsibility.
And look, you're allowed to advocate for your positions. You're allowed to attack the other side if you want to. But you have to understand that there are crazies out there. And so you're not supposed to be constantly poking them with a stick. And very specifically doing. I mean, how many times has Trump tweeted supporters talking about how if he gets removed, we're going to have a civil war? And Fox constantly, this is a coup. This is a lynching. They are trying to overthrow an election. That is obviously not what is happening. So they are willfully exaggerating to try to get people to think more radically about the situation. All like the common refrain now amongst right-wing commentators is, if the Democrats do X, people are going to grab their guns. Yeah. Not they're going to grab their guns, and that's terrible. Don't do that. Never threaten violence against your political opponents. They just end the sentence there. Meghan McCain on The View gets watched by millions of people. And she says, well, if they try to pass gun control, it's going to be a civil war. People are going to grab their guns and start shooting.
Yep.
And then we see at the Trump rallies more and more of his people saying, yeah, come and get my guns. I'm ready for it. Threatening reporters
right
there.
Instead of saying it's a terrible thing, what they're saying is that using that threat as a deterrent from people to voice their point of view or support who they want to support or say what they want to say against this president. It's instead of saying that's a horrible thing that we consider some people they do, it's, hey, don't forget. You might die, so don't be an American anymore.
Exactly. Thankfully, they caught this guy, but God only knows how many other people are sort of stewing in this anti-Adam Schiff thing.
And by the way, last thing, his attorney said, "Oh, he's not a viable threat because he can't go all the way and kill Adam Schiff on the East Coast because he lives in Arizona." Adam Schiff represents a district in California. California is right next door to Arizona. I don't care what you think he can do. Mm-hmm. If he's motivated to do it because he feels his duty in life is to be loyal to this president, then he'll do whatever he wants. I don't care what you think he can do. He said he wanted to do it.
Yeah, no.
And he had the means to do it.
We don't make the lives of our congresspeople dependent on whether someone like feels up to hop a greyhound one afternoon. Anyway, we're gonna take another break. On the other side, Ken Klippenstein. Okay, we're about to launch into a talk about a topic that is itself very serious. But perhaps more important than the topic is the return of Ken Klippenstein to the Damage Report. Ken, welcome back to the show.
I feel like Gandalf the Grey now.
Exactly. He's wearing gray.
Oh, see?
He tumbled forever through a mountain battling Crystalliza all the way to the bottom, but now he's back. Look, and Ken, while we're always happy to have you on, and you can join us in just chit chat, there is a good reason that you're here. You do have a very recent scoop.
Yeah, I'm sorry it can't be better news, but it's kind of the nature of my stories. What I found was that CBP has been given under the Trump administration. CBP stands for Customs and Border Protection. The part of it that ordinary people would probably recognize would be Border Patrol. They've been given a new security designation that allows it to sort of enjoy greater secrecy, not respond to open records requests in certain conditions. Generally, it's making it less transparent. I would say, in short, the public now will know less about what Border Patrol is up to.
So, and I sort of worry that this sort of change, I think for a lot of regular people, is not going to be immediately clear what it means or why it's being done. How is it being sold by the federal government? First of all, is it being sold in a public way, or like are they sort of like is it sort of hidden that this is happening? And what is the justification for this change?
This was done completely secretly. The only reason I know about it is because someone who works for CBP leaked it to me, the memo, giving it this new security designation that I should point out puts it in the, what was the term they used in the memo? They said the frontline intelligence agencies like the FBI or DOD components. Now Border Patrol enjoys a lot of those same protections. What's incredible about it is what they cite as a pretext, and I say pretext because I don't know for sure if this is why they did or if they're just saying this, why they did it, was a Twitter troll who was posting already public information about their salaries and their, you know, official role within the organization, which was already legal to access. And so they're acting like this is some huge affront to the safety of their employees, and that's why they're adopting these new security secrecy measures.
Yeah, government salaries across the board are public information, aren't they?
Yep.
And would this change actually hide salary information for CBP officials?
Oh yeah, we can't get them anymore under the Freedom of Information Act or other public records. And not just that, I would say crucially, you also can't know who is doing what. You can't know, I do a lot of FOIA work, and when I'm trying to find out you know, what sort of documents might be of interest to the public, it helps me a whole lot to know who has what role in an institution, you know, who's responsible for what, because then you have an idea of what sorts of records are going to be producing. And I would say generally, you know, that's a good thing. Like cops wear, you know, they have their name tag. So that's a measure of accountability. So you have an idea of who's, you know, you can remember if something happens, say, oh, officers such and such did this. And I would say a step away from that, I should note, I mean, these aren't Social Security numbers or, you know, personal home addresses or anything. This is just their sort of official information. So I don't see how that would protect them. And that's what experts told me as well, is they don't see how this would provide any sort of protection.
And so people who've been following the channel for a while, we've had you on for a lot of your stories, and quite a few of them are around CBP or ICE, other immigration and those sorts of stories. So like looking forward, how do you think this might impact your ability to continue that sort of investigative reporting?
I think they won't like it because I'm going to be getting more leaks. Someone like me, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. You can give it to me under FOIA, or I'm going to find out about it from my sources inside the agency, so they can take their pick.
I like that little threat. So you're not feeling necessarily deterred. Like you're perfectly happy to go through FOIA requests and things like that. But I mean, this story itself is the product of a leak, and so it certainly seems like there is going to be a release valve for this sort of information going forward.
Absolutely. One thing I like to do after I get a leak is then FOIA that document and say, look, I know you have it. I just reported it. Give it to me. So there's a lot of, there's a funny sort of symbiotic relationship between those two different things. But I would say more seriously, you know, not everyone has sources. If you're an ordinary person that wants to know what's going on and you're not a reporter, why would you have sources? So that I think, while it may not hurt me individually, I think it is going to hurt the society generally. With respect to people being able to understand what the government's up to.
Yeah.
Kenny, sorry, it's JR. So maybe calmed on my potential hair lighting on fire approach to this. So I'm hoping you say no, but are there any comparisons, at least maybe, this is just maybe your historical point of view. Are there any connections to this about past maybe dictatorships or kinds of governments that have a secret police force that kind of get started with having no more accountability, that this is comparable to, that now they can start doing things that people don't see happening and potentially harming people that don't have as much power without any kind of accountability? Have you seen this in any kind of other country or history?
I can think of a certain country that was very interested in immigration. But, you know, I will say that the Twitter account that they cited as their pretext for these new secrecy measures himself was just saying, you know, I want to put out into the public this information. He tried to organize it in a way that was more accessible because, remember, it was already public. He said, you know, I want to hold accountable them for putting children in cages, essentially.
Yeah.
And so to me, I have to imagine that factored into their consideration of why they were going to pursue this. So I do think there's a big political component to that, and that this isn't just simply, you know, law enforcement concerns as they may try to maintain.
Well, so great work as always. You know, we wish you could be doing it for us, but it's great that you're out there, you know, continuing the long streak of breaking great stories. Two quick questions though. One, now that we're going to need more leaks in this area, where can people reach you to do that sort of thing?
I love that you asked me that. I would install a Signal app, which is free, encrypts your messages, set it to disappearing, and text me at 202-510-1268. Again, that's 202-510-1268.
And the last is not really a question, it's more of a point. I just want you to be aware that there is sort of a popular storm brewing around a campaign to get one of your lavender sweaters sent to the studio to be hung in memoriam. So just know that that's out there. We want to retire your sweater. So Ken, as always, thank you so much for joining us. We love the work that you do.
Great to talk to you guys, take care.
You too. We're gonna take one last break. We come back a little bit more to close out the show.
I am proud to announce tonight that you will be receiving our country's highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
So there you have radio shock jock and one of the most prolific racists in recent American history, Rush Limbaugh, shocked that he's getting the Medal of Freedom, despite the fact that it had been news for hours at that point. So I don't know exactly why he was pretending to be shocked, like he knew he was gonna get it. It's so weird. But anyway, it happened. The Medal of Freedom, for those of you who might not know, is designed to recognize those people who have made an especially meritorious contribution to the security or national interests of the United States, world peace, cultural or other significant public or private endeavors. We're gonna delve into his endeavors, but what's your initial reaction?
Well, that's the one part that I was gonna look up the actual meaning too, and I saw you had it. The part, the cultural or significant public or private endeavor. So his cultural endeavor was to secure and produce and progress the racists in this country and their points of view. That's the cultural, that's the historical cultural thing about America that he's kept and he's preserved for the past 30 years or whatever he's been in.
100%. Let's go through a few examples of that because people might be like, well, you're just saying that, but what has he actually said? Well, we're gonna let you know. Feel free to jump in. But this jumps over a lot of different sorts of horrible rhetoric. The first, he said that a student who was denied a spot at a contraception hearing, quote, she must be paid to have sex, so she's a slut and a prostitute. Specifically, he said, what does it say about the college co-ed Susan Fluke who goes before a congressional committee and essentially says that she must be paid to have sex? What does that make her? It makes her a slut, right? It makes her a prostitute. She wants to be paid to have sex. She's having so much sex, she can't afford the contraception. She wants you and me and the taxpayers to pay her to have sex. Yeah, she wanted people to have access to contraception.
Yeah.
Which supposedly, if you were a movement that wanted to have less abortions, that seems like it'd be a good call. But no, she's a slut. He said that Kamala Harris and Barack Obama are not African American, and Rashida Tlaib's not a person of color. To be fair, he's the person who should decide. He said that Michelle Obama needs to get over slavery because she's like kind of like obsessed with it. Lest you believe that like Alex Jones has a monopoly on crazy right-wing conspiracy theorizing, Rush Limbaugh claimed that New Zealand mosque shootings were false flag operations despite no evidence. He's claimed multiple attacks were false flags, by the way, that's just one. He suggested that Matt Lauer should host a reality TV show locking victims in his office. It would be half dating game and half survivor and would be filmed entirely in his office, which would be a fun game to force the people that he sexually assaulted to go through. He said that maybe toilet water is a step up for some migrants based on what the left is telling us. And he called the migrant women who'd been abused in holding facilities a gaggle of hysterical women. In 2011, he mocked a speech by the president of China saying on air, Hu Jintao was just saying ching cha, ching chang cho chow, cha chow, ching cho, chi ba ba ka, quo qua qua ki. Nobody was translating, but that's the closest I can get, he said. He also said that Barack Obama said he wasn't allowed to play on his private high school basketball team in Hawaii because he played black style basketball. What is black style basketball? You empty the clip at your opponents? What is it? I'm just funning with you here, but really, what is black style basketball? You watch Limbaugh empty the clip headline tomorrow. He also said that the NBA should be the TBA, the Thug Basketball Association, and they're not teams, they're gangs. And he said, quote, look, let me put it to you this way. The NFL all too often looks like a game between the Bloods and the Crips without any weapons. There I said it. He talked about some caller getting the bone out of his nose. And look, like we have to stop at some point. But you can go through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of incidents as bad or worse. These are not like diversions from his career. This is why he had any office, any audience at all for 31
years. Meritorious contributions to cultural and of significant public or private endeavors. That's Rush Limbaugh's meritorious contributions to our society. And that's what he's being celebrated for. And it's impossible for me to care less about the fact that he got the Medal of Freedom. I'm not even upset about it. Who cares? It's a part of the trolling process. We know that he just announced that he's got
stage four lung cancer,
right? And then so this came up now. I'm not sure if they were planning it beforehand, so I can't speculate on that, but it seems that it came for because of that. So once you get diagnosed with that kind of condition, then suddenly you get the Medal of Honor, because then if anyone brings up how much of a horrible person he's been in his entire life, they are not a bad person.
Exactly.
It's a trolling.
He's a bad person. He's an enthusiastic bad person. That is all he has ever been. That's the only reason anyone ever liked him. JR, as always, thank you so much. Great to have you here. Thank you everybody for watching. Lots more planned for the rest of the week. We got more for you.
Send Johnny Pie birthday gifts. Expensive things.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.